Blog Talk Radio.
Gideon!
This is below his streets and found something straight out of the chalet.
Come, we tell them this time
I'm ready. He's like the president.
Every time.
And you never know, you should know.
Everything that I have said. I've seen many situations. I had to avoid their
illusion.
Now getting caught in their confusion. Escaping this mental invasion. I've seen many situations. I had to avoid their illusion. Their confusion, lest a man escape this invasion. Seems as if you're right, so why should I fight? Just to prove a point that it's time. See that there is pride behind all this light. Cause I fail to see what's wrong from what's right. Can it be so hard to express my feelings? Oh Lord, about the misconceptions of my teachers. Can't you see the prophecies revealing? Oh Lord,
yeah. Oh
Lord, help us now that segregation is rising.
Short mind, evil see them as so. Frustration turns most friends into foe. Working day and night trying to overthrow. Two counsel together, plot against a brother. Robbing a barrel who is the vice of a hero. The wicked gates are turned back low. Oh, the wicked gates are turned back low. It seems as if you're right, so why should I fight? Just to prove a point at this time. See that there is pride behind all this might. Cause I first should see what's wrong from what's right. Can it be so hard to express my feelings? Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, about the misconceptions of my teachers. Oh, boy, boy. Hey, can't you see prophecies revealing? Yeah. Hey, oh, Lord, help us now that segregation. When some we learn them and teach, they know we are no rich. Ignorance of the fool, yes, yes, no one speak. Oh, eating the people, they must straight out of sick. Everyone feed themselves, but please cannot speak. Oh, it's not the glory, the earth to the meek. Hey, hey, if I laugh, I weak. Oh, harvest time, how when them are going to reap. You think the judge are dead, but in my life, I'm not speak. We all got to reap what we sow.
We sow.
Man, I be reap what we sow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I say.
Greetings once again, and welcome to the Chef Rob Show here on Blog Talk Radio. I still got that little problem, but I'm kicking it. You know, I'm about to beat the shit out of it in a minute. A few more teas and lemon juice and that kind of shit, and I'll be better. But, you know, they don't give up. These are some minor things. They're minor. Keep on working. It's another brother I wanted to call in tonight. I talked to him. I talked to his brother today. And I was hoping that he can call in because he got some special insight to some things about some killings and murders in the streets here in Chicago. I think he got some extraordinary feelings about it. And he put some posts on his Facebook page. I don't want to put him out there until he's ready to go ahead and put himself out there. You know, if you want to go ahead and say something, that's good. So, I'm hoping he calls in. I don't recognize his number on the switchboard just yet. But, see, my brother's here. And get to him in a minute. But, yeah, tonight I wanted to talk about the Trayvon Martin. I think it's another wasted opportunity of bringing black folks together and talking about nothing. But they quit to pass around the fucking collection plate. They collected a lot of money from this shit. Don't tell me they didn't. You know, they got a lot of support, got a whole lot of people out there. All these damn cities marching around and all this other shit. Rally, rally, get on out here. For what? I think I got a picture on, if you came in my chat room, you'll probably see this, some of the pictures I put up. You know, after 50 years, all y'all doing is marching for jobs. What the fuck? This shit ain't making no sense, man. A lot of these people are fucking irrelevant, but they keep getting the people who don't know. So, you know, it takes people like us to wake them up. We may have to go ahead and, you know, throw a few bricks off a fucking building to get your goddamn attention. You gotta do some dramatic shit, because some people just ain't getting a fucking message. And it's a damn shame that you ain't getting a message. It's right there in front of you. It don't take much. You know, quit running from the fucking truth. Quit hiding from facts. Don't go ahead and turn your head when you go ahead and, you know, that's some slave shit, man. You see your brother and sister getting whooped over there, getting beat. Nigga, stop that shit. Go ahead, step in. And also, if you go ahead and see your brother and sister going whooped by another fucking nigga, you whoop his ass. I can't stand to see a brother going, I don't give a damn what she done. She could be the most ruthless bitch on the fucking planet. But hey, look, you know, you don't be just dogging the shit out of, and just because you can, you're stronger than and all that other shit. You know, and it's some sisters out here, they ain't worth the fuck. I mean, don't get it twisted. But a lot of these sisters go ahead and do a lot of shit. I see. This is what I see. A lot of sisters out here doing shit because some of these guys, they ain't a goddamn, they ain't nothing. But it still go back to the woman. So it's a vicious fucking cycle because she raising a punk. Because his daddy left and you just go ahead and have more kids and keep that shit going on and on and on and on, just rolling down here, just keep on putting us into a fucking hole, into our goddamn grave. Some sad shit. Before I bring the brother on, I wanted to go ahead and play this. I'm going to play this a few times during my show. This is something, I didn't hear this type of message over the weekend, so I want y'all to hear this quick clip. Martin Luther King, the kind of shit I was kind of talking about. I got a few others, but this one, oh, it's a few others. But this is the only one I want to play tonight. I'm going to play a few more in the next couple of days, because we got to push this point. He's telling me he wants to go get his check. Check this out. Listen.
With the problem. At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today, many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
You hear that shit there? Now, you didn't hear none of them fuckers when them that damn march on Washington say shit like that. All right, you brothers, your line's open. How y'all doing?
Hotel, brother.
Yeah, you know, that clip right there, that short piece right there, go ahead and show you that all these motherfuckers out here talking that shit ain't doing nothing but profiting off our fucking pain. That right there. You don't hear none of them, not even his fucking kids, are saying something similar to that shit today. Am I wrong?
Never heard it. Oh, no, you're not wrong at all, brother. Not wrong at all. But again, it goes back to, you know, keeping the focus on the dream, not keeping the focus on the movement. And the words that the brother was speaking geared towards a particular practice, a particular, and move from theorizing into actually placing into practice what we need to do, which, as he stated, go get our check. But as we would state, you know, move forward in the progress, the developmental stage of our people. He was calling for action. That's not what they don't want to pay attention to that, Dr. Kane. They don't want to pay attention to let's go get our check. They want to pay attention to I have a dream. Just the quote, I have a dream, that's not bringing about any type of practice. It's not bringing about any type of movement or progress. You just steady saying you have a dream. You have a vision. You got a dream. So that's the focus, to have a dream.
Yeah, you know, keep on looking toward the stars. You're going to get it. Just keep on hoping and praying. None of that shit seem to be working for us. It's time. We're way past time for a new focus. And one of that things to go ahead and help us go ahead and get focused and get right is to stop letting these motherfuckers talk for us.
Well,
these
bastards
ain't shit hurting you, and they keep on going ahead. And because here's something else. I bet you couldn't go ahead and see these motherfuckers wearing the same goddamn suit in the same fucking month, same fucking year. They got all brand new shit all the fucking time. Spending their money wisely, ain't they? On themselves.
Oh, yeah. And that's how the game goes. You know, Jesse Jackson's all-time quote for our people is what? Keep hope alive. Hope. You know, so this is what they want to put it in our face. This is what they want the psychological fervor of our people to be on, is to A, keep hope alive, B, keep having this dream. You know, none of this is cool.
Look at nice this too. You can travel around the planet and all this other stuff. That shit comes.
Keep hoping for that dream. But then, you know, then they counted it and they have us in the church. And, you know, when you put that together and you intertwine focusing on the dream, when you intertwine keeping hope alive, and you intertwine those two with the kingdom in heaven, you know, you'll get your kingdom in heaven when you die. You know, don't worry about it, because when it's time to go, we'll have it all. We'll be with the Lord. We'll be with the Lord when it's time to die. All of this comes together as that source of pacification for us, that source of pacification for our people, to keep us on a particular stage, on a particular progressive platform of dreaming. So we'll progress all day long in dreaming. We'll progress all day long in hoping. We're the most hopeful damn people that they are out there. Because we're hoping every day that this shit ends. You know, we're dreaming every day that this shit ends. You know, but hopes, dreams, and even for those people who go to church, you know, even their books say faith without works. Hey, you know, so this is what we miss. We're missing the works. We're missing that Dr. King that say we need to go get our check. That's the King we miss.
I'm gonna play that one more time for the hearing impaired. I didn't play that one again earlier. Pay attention.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
Now, you see, here's something else that we need to go here and address too, because they always tell you, you know, lately I've been hearing this message: if you work hard, you can achieve any damn thing here.
Well, for that and matter, you could achieve what? The American dream.
The American dream. If you work hard. That one that fucks me up more than a lot of other shit, too. Because you can't go ahead, you know, it's like, I got another clip. I wish I had got that one on where Claude Anderson is going ahead and breaking down the Monopoly game for black folks and how we starting out in this game, you know. White man's got $1,000. I think he said the Asian man got about $300 and the Latino got about $200 and then the black man got about $500. And you go around the board one time, you know, you barely make it. You going to jail, you know. And the point he's trying to make is you ain't got enough money to go ahead and deal and play this game. We don't have enough to go ahead and play this game because they started out way ahead of us. And because that thing came out last year. That chart came out last year on how white wealth is 20 times greater than black wealth.
But you know, that's even when you take statistics like that, brother, you know, as a conscious community, we always sit back and we say, never should we be allowed to consider ourselves as a minority, you know.
Right.
And we should think on a broad level. Brother Malcolm L. Hashim Lee Shabazz, peace be upon him, mentioned that to us prior to his assassination, including Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, including Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We've all been taught by our ancestors that we are not a minority people, we are a majority people. But that goes the same as even in wealth. You know, white people don't have more than what we have. You know, we got more than what they have. When you think on the international level, our problem is we have not unified, not just on the state level or local level, we haven't unified on a national level, nor have we unified on an international level. And because of that disunity, we're seen amongst ourselves as a minority with the ideological perspective of way of thinking on an international level, but we haven't achieved that international camaraderie. We haven't achieved that international unison. But, again, when we look at those statistics, if according to our unity, will make those statistics false. Because we have all resources, we wouldn't be talking on this via teleconference had it not been for African minerals and resources. You and I wouldn't have certain things here within this American country had it not been for the bauxite and the different mechanisms and tools, the rubber for the tires. We wouldn't be driving around with many the minerals and resources that's out of Africa had it not been for us, but
here's the thing: we don't control that, and that's something that we really need to get control of. So it makes us a lot more poor because they put a value on those things, you know.
Exactly.
And a lot of us put a value on working to provide these things for other people.
Exactly.
That's an even bigger problem because you don't go ahead and think about let's get control of that shit and let's go ahead and do for ourselves. But you got too many people saying, hey, I want to get a job. It's stuck in their head. Get a job. You just like that's marching. Get jobs. We need jobs. I feel like I want to go ahead and throw a damn brick through the TV when I hear somebody tell me, tell people, get a job. No, motherfucker. Build an industry. Get your own business. Find some way to go ahead and pull some motherfuckers together. You can go ahead and do it. If you can sit around and fucking go ahead and get high and drink all that bullshit, or go ahead and fucking conspire to do real extra stupid shit, you can do this. It don't make no damn sense for a lot of people to be doing what they do. I see some shit, and I know y'all see shit too, that don't make, it just don't, it's mind-boggling why you want to go ahead and keep on living this motherfucking way.
But see, even with that, brother, I mean, let's really get deep into this conversation. And even when we say, because you know, we have plenty, even amongst ourselves, we sit back and we say, man, you know, we need to create our own, build our own jobs. Instead of begging them, we'll build our own jobs. But let's go deeper than that, because even at the end of the day, would that satisfy us to just create our own jobs when even at the end of that, you still have to report to their federal government, you still have to report to their IRS, you still have to come to them with the tally of what you got, so they can give you permission to achieve a limited goal set. In other words, even when we deal with nation building, and yes, I'm not saying let's negate on us begging our own jobs, because we should do that. We need to do that. But we have to go even further, because sometimes we have in our head that if we created our own jobs and we ain't got to worry and sit back and beg, we still forget the girdle that's holding all of this up. It's as though, okay, we got ours, but still at the end of the day, they still control it. How do we get as a people to not only create our own jobs, but we dictate the policies, the mandates, everything that goes with it? We dictate all of that. How do we begin to do that? But the problem becomes you can't do that because you still operate off of their currency. See, they smart. The way they got this thing built is no matter, even if they gave you the opportunity to do what you want to do, and they said, you know what, we're going to give you the tools and resources. You Negroes, go ahead and build your own. Build your own community up. And we went ahead, took those tools, start building. At the end of the day, we still building a society up, because at the end of the day, they control the currency that you spread throughout your community. We say that all the time. Black people got $900 billion rolling through their communities every year. But that's not our $900 billion. That's they $900 billion that we have circulating through our communities. We don't have $900 billion of our currency circulating throughout our community that we can sit back and have them trading amongst us, sit back and going through the motions of whether we want to play, sit at the table with their Congress, and we have our Congress. Sit at the table with their senators, and we have our senators. Sit at the table with their department of so-and-so, and we have our department of so-and-so. You see, so we have to really begin to define what are we mad at, but when we say what we're mad at, how deep are we really going to really achieve this freedom and liberation that we're talking about? Because this is going to take a hell of a lot than most of this conversation that we have out on the streets to begin to really change what's going on. And that's why when we talked about earlier, dealing with the economists that we need and from our communities to get together to build a Department of Finance, we need to not only focus on what currency that we operate in here within America, but have our brothers, like the brother you had on the show, I forget the brother's name, who was talking about international monetary exchanges.
It's Brother Caleb, College of
Okay. Yeah, that brother there, that was right on time what that brother was saying. And that's how we have to start thinking, because we can't get comfortable if America decided to sit back and say, it's just like how we say all the time, brother, that whole reparations bit. What if America did turn around tomorrow and say, you know what, we apologize. Every nigga in the country, we'll give y'all $500,000 apiece. You know, I hope this satisfies y'all. But we're going to give everybody $500,000 apiece. We're sorry for enslaving, you know, your ancestors. We're sorry for everything that we did. We're sorry for the assassinations. We're sorry, you know, but this is the best that we can do right now. So we're going to give every nigga in the country $500,000. Niggas will be happy as hell. I bet you, I guarantee the revolutionary talk that you hear from most cats, that's going to cease for a little while. Niggas ain't going to be, because niggas will be concentrating on buying up stuff.
I said the exact same thing because I see them going ahead using a lot of that stuff as in the conscious community as a platform to go ahead and to build some kind of riches and wealth. I don't see them real serious, because if you were real serious about it, you know, you'd have done some shit by now. You'd have created a product or something like that, or a service or something to go ahead and fund what you're talking about, instead of go ahead and you're going to go ahead and pay it off your speeches and your other shit. That's some bullshit.
Exactly.
You know, quit go ahead and try to profit off your speeches and your books and shit. I kind of go ahead and I see that,
man,
now.
Look at this mega church we got, man. Look at this mega church sitting on over there on 115th?
And Ashley?
Meeks. Big-ass church sitting over here, man. House of Hope. This damn church is about the size of the United Center.
Yeah.
Size of the United Center. However,
And you got a lot more property than that because they had that big ass restaurant in there, daycare. They had a bunch of shit on that property, man. And it's huge.
Now look at the community.
At the community just outside the fucking gate.
Exactly, community outside the gate looked the way it looked. But you got this beautiful, you know. You ain't even got to just have church in there. You can sponsor some events, sponsor some games. You know what I'm saying? That's how big it is. But that's what our people would spend their money on. Because no sooner as you even step through the door, you got about three ATM machines sitting in the front entrance doorway.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now this is what we spend our money on. This is where, you know, and government would sure fund that. Because they know they're going to get their money back. Because, again, you are helping to further the progress of their economy. That has nothing to do with our freedom. The House of Hope has nothing to do with our freedom. I mean, let's just be real with it. They ain't talking about our freedom. They ain't talking about justice for our people. They ain't talking about sovereignty for our people. Hell, they got a mortgage to pay every damn month. That's what they're talking about.
Of course. Hey, let me play this song real quick. I want you to think about this song real fast. Hold on.
Well, you hear me say no. Without any apology, it's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. In the 50s, my mother, sister, run go England. Now them gone America, them turn American. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. So you left Clarendon and go a Brixton, and you check the things cool in a Liverpool. But enough Powell didn't know that things would get a blow. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. And I listen to the news, I get confused. A black man shine, the Ku Klux Klan. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. If you're white, it's alright. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, get back. Are you better? Attack. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. Now the fire have a burn, the blood have a run. At times Big Ben really tumbled down. And Peter said, him have a burn a chalice. But me say, him should have burned down the palace. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. Hear why? When you're there, you say, hey, sir. When you go there, you say, a cup of tea, please. It's no good. Rastafari, no. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. When you're there, you say, hey, sir. When you go there, you say, hey, mate, it's getting late. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. Now them shoot Reagan, them shoot the Pope, them shoot after the Queen, and you take it to a door. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. England, what is your plan? Blacks in England, check the time. Skinhead them now, check them crime. Blacks in England, find your land. Cause it's no good to stay in a white man's country so long. Yes.
Yeah, there. Welcome back to the show. This is Chef Rob here at Blog Talk Radio. My voice still messed up. That brother had to step away for a minute. But my whole thing is this. I am so sick and tired of these goddamn poverty pimps going ahead and not being confronted on a regular basis. I have not seen any opposition. I mean, like, you know that the media's got the bad, they got their ways of going ahead blocking out a whole lot of shit. But I really feel that it should be more people in opposition to when these fuckers out there speaking. I mean, I think it should be more people out there when they go here and they got a camera in front of them at these big events and all this other stuff, all these cameras and all this shit around. I think it should be just more people going ahead and confronting them, throwing up a bed sheet. You know, hey, look at this blood stain on what's going on here in the city of Chicago. Look at what all these damn kids going here and being killed. None of these goddamn bastards been out in the street really for this, trying to go ahead and stop this shit over here. And it's happening in almost every city. Chicago is just notorious for that shit because it's been happening. It's just outrageous numbers of people getting killed over here. Every damn day, this shit that's happening is over here, especially on the weekend. On the weekends, it can be like fivefold, you know, sixfold, almost ten. It's just crazy. You cannot find somebody here in this city that ain't been affected by the murders here. And there's a lot of fucking people here. And it just don't make no damn sense that these poverty pimps don't come out and really, really address this issue and put something together in place. But they don't want to. They got to keep this shit like this. Just when the same thing, I always say that, hey, look, these people go here and want to talk about what's going on to justify their ass is staying in power. Throw them some money and they're going to figure out a plan. You know, I feel it's time when you see their asses on fucking stage, it's time to throw some bricks and pop bottles and shit. Throw some stuff up there that they don't want to fucking deal with. Throw a bag of shit on them. You know, fuck that. You know, stop listening to these motherfuckers. I get fucking tired of hearing these motherfuckers, and I got to go ahead and say it. I'm pissed because I have to go ahead and listen to another black man go ahead and tell me, hey, look, my nephew, my so-and-so died. Another sister tell me her son, her daughter was shot, killed, now, you know, and being shot up with military-style weapons. How the hell all that shit getting in the fucking street? This shit is fucking crazy. And none of these bastards are going ahead, coming around, really doing anything. But you best believe these motherfuckers got money on top of money. We should be doing them audits of these motherfuckers. I'm sick and tired of them. I can't take them. Let me play something else before I go ahead and hit the goddamn roof.
Why should the black man in America concern himself, since we've been away from the African continent for 400 years, 300 or 400 years? Why should we concern ourselves? What impact does what happened to them have upon us? Number one, first you have to realize that up until 1959, Africa was dominated by the colonial powers, and by the colonial powers of Europe having complete control over Africa, they projected the image of Africa negatively. They projected Africa always in a negative light: jungles, savages, cannibals, nothing civilized. And when, and naturally, it was so negative until it was negative to you and me. And you and I began to hate it. We didn't want anybody to tell us anything about Africa, and much less call us an African. And in hating Africa and hating the African, we ended up even hating ourselves without even realizing it. Because you can't hate the roots of a tree and not hate the tree. You can't hate your origin and not end up hating yourself. You can't hate Africa and not hate yourself. And you show me one of these people over here who have been thoroughly brainwashed, who has a negative attitude toward Africa, and I'll show you one that has a negative attitude toward himself. You can't have a negative attitude toward yourself, a positive attitude toward yourself, and a negative attitude toward Africa at the same time. to the same degree that your attitude, that your understanding of, and attitude toward Africa becomes positive, you'll find that your understanding of and your attitude toward yourself will also become positive. And this is what the white man knows. So they very skillfully made you and me hate our African identity, our African characteristics. And you know yourself that we have been a people who hated our African characteristics. We hated our hair. We hated the shape of our nose. We wanted one of those long, dog-like noses, you know. Yeah. We hated the color of our skin. Hated the blood of Africa that was in our veins. And in hating our features and our skin and our blood, why, we had to end up hating ourselves. And we hated ourselves. Our color became, to us, a chain. We felt that it was holding us back. Our color came to us, became to us like a prison, which we felt was keeping us confined, not letting us go this way or that way. And we felt that all of these restrictions were based solely upon our color, and the psychological reaction to that would have to be that as long as we felt imprisoned or chained or trapped by black skin, black features, and black blood, that skin and those features and that blood that was holding us back automatically had to become hateful to us. And it became hateful to us. It made us feel inferior. It made us feel inadequate. It made us feel helpless. And when we fell victim to this feeling of inadequacy or inferiority or helplessness, we turned to somebody else to show us the way. We didn't have confidence in another black man to show us the way, or black people to show us the way. In those days, we didn't. We didn't think a black man could do anything but play some horn, you know, some sound, and make you happy with some songs, and in that way. But when an inferior thing, where our food, clothing, and shelter was concerned, and our education was concerned, we turned to the man. We never thought in terms of bringing these things into existence for ourselves. We never thought in terms of doing things for ourselves, because we felt helpless. And what made us feel helpless was our hatred for ourselves. One of the things that made the black Muslim movement grow was its emphasis upon things African. This was the secret to the growth of the black Muslim movement. African blood, African origin, African culture, African ties. And you'd be surprised. We discovered that deep within the subconscious of the black man in this country, he's still more African than he is American. He thinks that he's more American than African because the man is jiving him and the man is brainwashing him every day, telling him, you're an American, you're an American. Man, how could you think you're an American and you have never had any kind of American treat over here? You have never, never. 10 men can be sitting at a table eating, you know, dining. And I can come and sit down where they're dining. They're dining. I got a plate in front of me, but nothing is on it. Because all of us sitting at the same table are all of us diners. I'm not a diner until you let me dine. Then I become a diner. Just being at the table with others who are dining doesn't make me a diner. And this is what you got to get in your head here in this country. Just because you're in this country doesn't make you an American. And no, you got to go farther than that before you can become an American. You got to enjoy the fruits of Americanism. And you haven't enjoyed those fruits. You've enjoyed the thorns. You've enjoyed the thistle, but you have not enjoyed the fruits. No, sir. So I point these things out, brothers and sisters, so that you and I will know the importance in 1965 of being in complete unity with each other, harmony with each other, and not letting the man maneuver us into fighting one another. I say that again that I'm not a racist. I don't believe in any form of segregation or anything like that. I'm for the brotherhood of everybody, but I don't believe in enforcing brotherhood upon people who don't want it. As long as we practice brotherhood among ourselves, and then others who want to practice brotherhood with us, we practice it with them also, we're for that. But I don't think that we should run around trying to love somebody who doesn't love us. Thank you.
Now, what I one thing that them, these poverty pimps came out to go here and calm down the savages and the Negroes. But this brother was saying something different about, taught you to hate yourself. And I think these poverty pimps are going here pushing a whole lot of self-hatred because they're achieving their American dream and they want you to be like them. Mr. Holicism, how you doing?
Peace, brother. How you doing?
I'm all right. How you feeling?
I'm good. happened to be here finally when you're doing your show. So I said, well, let me tune in and see what's going on. Most of the time, I'm not even home.
It's cool, brother. It's cool. But how you feel about the Poverty Pimps, man?
Well, you know, my whole YouTube channel, my existence as Mr. Holipsism was based on me going at the Poverty Pimps. Because I learned a long time ago that, you know, for us to talk about the white man, it's like talking about a snake and being surprised when snakes bite. I just it doesn't surprise me. They are what they are. So I said, well, it can't just be them. What's the reason why it's taken so long for us to mobilize and form something in our community? It has to be people that's working for him in our community. And those people have got to hold leadership positions.
Exactly.
Because there's no way that we can be in this situation for so long without us coming. You would think that somebody would come to the conclusion that maybe we need to get our own shit.
Yeah.
You mean in all the times, since all this time after slavery was over, nobody, that thought didn't run across nobody's mind? Come on, of course it did. But you have people that's in our community who have a vested interest in us staying in the position that we are in. And they look like us, they talk like us, they got the same lingo, the same jive, but they are definitely working against our interest.
But and here's something else. It ain't just the obvious ones. You know,
right.
The Messy Jessies and the Slick Perm Al Sharptons and the other ones. It's a whole lot of these goddamn entertainers is going ahead and doing their part to go ahead and keep shit like that too.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, you know, they need to be addressed also. It's really sad.
Well, you know,
when I go ahead. LeBron James is about to come out with some with a sitcom in a little while. Like, what kind of coonery shit is he gonna have on now?
Well, I mean, this is the, you know, like, it's a script that people are following for success in this country, you know, and they all working off the same page. You get yourself a little reality show, you get yourself a little talk show. You ain't talking about nothing, you know, but you just have a talk show. You go through the whole, all of the points that you have to go through to achieve success. And once they realize that you ain't about nothing, and once they know that you ain't really, you know, busting no grapes, you can achieve a lot of financial success in this country. You know? I mean, it just, I believe, you know, like, everybody talks about money and how they, you can get money easily. All you got to do is not have no self-esteem, no pride. You can get all the money in the world.
Right.
Problem is, a lot of people are held back by that thing called pride. You know, it's like, I don't want to just, you know, be a bitch out here, but hey, those are the ones that's getting paid.
Exactly.
So, you know, my thing is, how much do you want the money? I remember there was an interview, Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, whatever the hell he calling himself.
Yeah.
He was on the radio, and he was just talking, and in the middle of the interview, he said, man, I was willing to do anything to make it. And then he realized what he said and kind of like tried to backpedal.
Right.
But, you know, it's the truth. Anything.
It was out there then. Exposed.
Anything. But I'll be honest with you. If you get rid of any one of these guys, another one's going to come in a place. So themselves,
you know,
is not really the problem.
It's not so much another one's going to come in their place. It's that the opposition here has steep pockets to go ahead and fund them to bring them up. And some of these guys, they groomed to go ahead and bring to come in like that. Think so?
Well, I think that this system grooms these people. That's my concept that I introduced. Like I said, when I came on YouTube, the nigger manufacturing machine. that's my thesis.
Wait a minute.
Culture,
break that down for me, please. What is the nigger manufacturing machine?
That what we call culture in this country, and I'm just speaking specifically African-American culture. And when I say African-American, I mean any black person living in America. I don't care where you're from. You here in America, you are under African-American culture. And it's a nigga manufacturing machine. It manufactures Negroes exponentially like gremlins.
God damn.
And we, if anybody ever seen The Matrix, how they describe Neo, Neo was an anomaly. An anomaly is not the norm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's, well, I guess that's the best word for it, an anomaly, a mutation.
Mm-hmm.
That's what conscious people who are African-centered are. We're anomalies. We are fail-safe mechanisms. The only reason why we exist is because if we didn't exist, the culture would be dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reality of what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a nigger manufacturing machine. So when a nigger manufacturing machine manufactures Negroes, is anybody surprised? No, I mean, it's not shocking to me. You want to shock me? Have an Autumn, a child like Autumn Ashanti submerged from this mess. That's more of a shock to me. Where a little kid can use the word paradigm in a poem and actually know what it means.
Hmm.
That's shocking to me. But Negroes doing Negro things, that don't shock me at all, man. And like I said, people can complain about these individuals, but the bottom line is these individuals, they're like gremlins. You cut off Lil Wayne's head, another one's going to grow back.
Yeah.
You know, so the thing that we got to address is the system that produces them. And that's why I feel that the best thing for us, and I don't know if Kyle is on the line or if he's listening, but he knows that me and him have been on the same page with this. We need to get our own land, develop our own infrastructure, and develop our own societies and our own systems and start taking care of ourselves and fuck these people. They can have America. I want a white president. I don't know about y'all. Y'all, everybody's so happy they got a black. I want a white president.
You know,
I want a white man to be responsible when this shit goes down the hole, not one of us.
Yep.
You know what I kept saying? Yep. I was saying, and then some people attacked me. I was like, you know, for this last election, I said Mitt Romney should have won, because you niggas still didn't get it. After 4 years of having this black man, you ain't got shit. You see, he don't give a fuck about you. He keep on doing shit for white people, these people, gay people, all these. I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, when is he addressing
you know
shit
so
over
crazy,
here? And my cousin came at me. That's another reason why my voice is hoarse. Because this weekend, I had the same fucking discussion with this motherfucker this weekend about, hey, Barack Obama don't give a shit about black folks. Because he walked these goddamn streets here in Chicago in the same goddamn area where some of these kids were fucking dying in. He was right here in these areas and dodged bullets too. Ain't did a fucking thing over here. So
you know
don't go ahead and tell
you know
me he got
funny.
His hands tied with all this other shit when you got executive orders. I don't want to hear that shit. Executive orders actually saved me as being a vet. So fuck what you're talking about, man. I don't want to hear that shit. You can stop a lot of this shit. You can put some shit over here. You can change this whole situation. But keeping this shit like this goes ahead and helps keep him fucking looking good to them, because he ain't doing nothing for niggas. And then, right now, they talking about going to fucking spend some more damn money in Syria. I'm like, what the fuck? And people go in still defending this bastard. Man, you know, these niggas are lost.
Well, one thing that I can say is that Barack Obama has not been any surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what the deal was when he was running before he became president, and I told people during that time, I'm like, the thing is, we have so little victories that if we get anything that even seems like a victory, we hold on to it and we push it up. Like the mere fact that my mom and my people from that generation never got to see a black president, I was getting off on that. You know, it's like, well, I was happy for them. I was happy that they was able to feel good and see, like, feel like, you know, some vindication for dealing with this bullshit. But I knew in my heart what the deal was. You know?
Yeah.
He kind of, Barack Obama kind of neutralized us. Like, when it came to the nationalist LA in our community, he neutralized because we couldn't really speak what we really wanted to say because a lot of our elders and a lot of our people that went through all of that Jim Crow and stuff, they was really, you know, like, excited about that.
See,
you know,
but look,
wanna,
he,
I mean,
I
don't want to hurt my mom, you know, I want to hurt my grandma and all of that. So I just, you know, I'm happy for him. But I knew in my heart that what the deal was. And, I mean, to be honest with you, the people that's really pissed at Barack Obama, you figured black folks would be pissed at him, but they're not. The people that's pissed with him is the white progressives. Those are the ones that's pissed off because they voted him in thinking that he was going to be different than Bush, and then he turns out to be worse than Bush. That's the funny part. So they putting his ass to the fire, but black folks are just happy that he's there. You know, it's like most of our people don't know shit about policy.
You know, and that, look, that, all that shit wore off. I was happy to go in and see it, but then after a while, I was like, okay, now what you going to do? Now I'm like, yeah, wait a minute. You've been there for a while, brother. Come on now. You disappoint
I mean,
me
Syria? Syria? Are you kidding me? Since when is chemical weapons been some fucking red line in the sand? How come you didn't attack Israel when they use white phosphorus? That's a chemical weapon. They didn't do shit about that. If they're going to attack, if that's a red line, they should be attacking themselves because the CIA, do you see when they did the CIA dump of all these documents and all this shit that we're finding out right now?
Oh yeah, the one I keep missing is that chemical weapons thing and how they go ahead. They was buddy buddy with Iraq. After they took down Iran, then they gonna go ahead and be with Iraq to go ahead and send chemical weapons into Iran and use Iran to send weapons into Iraq.
They gave,
I'm like, what?
Not only did they give him chemical weapons, they gave him the coordinates where to drop them.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, oh, we can't deal with the. We can't allow chemical weapons to be used. And then this is something that nobody's even talking about. So America is fighting for Al Qaeda now.
Hey, am I on, Rob? Am I in?
Yeah, brother, you being on?
What's up, brother? Hold up, what's up, Rob?
Hey, what's up,
man? Yeah, I'm trying not to laugh. Hold on, you have me cracking up, man. It's like, God dang. Yeah, because hold up, you're so in your image making, you're so good at what you're doing. You know, your sarcasm and your scenarios and stuff like that. It's just like amazing. You crack me up all the freaking time. And how you make your point. You know, I love that. You know, yeah. Like I said, I was thinking about something. Do you know like Black Wall Street, Rosewood, and all those things? They came and I studied this right. Those were basically 19th century black people, you know. 18th and 19th century black was the free black population or the black population who bought their freedom and everything. There was no liberals telling you that America is going to be this. You didn't have no Uncle Tom telling you that. Why? Because if they Uncle Tom was stupid to tell you that, next thing you know, he's getting resold back into slavery or getting lynched or whatever. So we didn't have those people like that. So listen to this very carefully. We knew, our ancestors knew, look, you know, like my family's from Elizabeth City, North Carolina, right? And Rachel Maddow did a piece, you go to her website, Elizabeth City, North Carolina, and I loved it. She talked about the whole history, and I saw my family history right there, East Carolina, you know, North Carolina, Elizabeth City State University, the building of the Dismal Swamp Canal, 1,200 African-American slaves built the Dismal Swamp Canal, right, during the Civil before the Civil War in 1814, I believe. And that was vital for the Confederates to hold. But now Elizabeth City is like a battleground of voting rights act right now, you know, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth City is my family farm. We still own land down there, but most of our land was, we didn't really work. It just goes back to my story of my family, the story of black America. And I asked myself this all the time when I went to Elizabeth City a few months ago, right? And I saw all the land that my granddad used to own, right?
Now you see car washes. They got white people got a stadium down there, pizzerias, strip malls, gated communities, and everything. I said, that's the land we used to play and break chickens, his chicken farm, and he had vast fields and everything. We used to play right down the field right there. Now it's all white folks own everything. And I asked myself this question: why the heck did we all come to New York? I said, we wait a minute here. We had the land. Elizabeth City's not that far from the open ocean, you know, not that far from the ocean. The Albemarle Sound, right? Right at the open ocean. That means there's a port right there. We had a port. You had not too far North Virginia. You had Wilmington down the coastline and everything. So you had coastline, you had ports. And plus, and I'll say to myself, why did we all go to New York? Why? You know, and I said to myself, this is the problem. We can't let these people take all our land away. And then again, when you look at the history, white people were not going to give us the money and everything to really run our farms when we wanted to do it. And they conspired. It's like the war. And I look, and I almost, when I was sitting in the pizzeria down there, I almost got up, and I was so full of anger, right? But I almost got up in front of these white kids. One white kid was gritting on me, so I was gritting on him back. Like, I said, I'll get up and smack you right in the freaking head because you don't know how angry I am right now. He looked at me like, what am I doing in there, right? And I looked at him like, this used to be my family. You know, all my family used to own all this land. The whole area was owned by black people after the Civil War. Somehow got control of the whole area mostly and everything. Elizabeth City still to this day has a majority black population. But most black people in the city are poor. But still, there still used to be a vibrant black community in Elizabeth City, like an independent city. My father told us about movie theaters. Black people, before integration, we had movie theaters. We had everything, drive-ins. We had restaurants and everything. And I said to my father, if I didn't come to New York, I wouldn't have met your mother. I said, well, that's a good thing that came out of it. You know, and I said that's a good thing to get. My mother moved from Harlem to Queens. And that's where they met. You know, that's our families met. And so anyway, I said to myself, why? It dawned on me. I said, why is it that everybody said, oh, we're going to New York to get a good job, and we had this stuff like that. Get this, the white people that were there the whole time, they never went anywhere.
Right.
You got generation after generation. Go to any part of North Carolina and ask the whites, we've been here for 300 years, so something like that. We're all over the place. We're in Philly, we're here. So how can any sane person who's honest tell you that this is your country? Well, we haven't even settled in this country yet. 300-something years you've been here, we're still not settled yet.
Right. You know what, Candace, because you touched on it. See, because they were able to go ahead and do commerce amongst themselves. You know, even though we would try, a lot of people, because I got, my aunt still is in charge of a lot of land that my mom's family had down in Mississippi, okay? And so, and right now, her daughter's damn near is one that's in control of it, not even her sisters. And she trying to sell it, and she want to retire and stay up here and stay in her condo and let that land, she going to sell that to some white
people. I didn't want to tell you that part of my family history. Where my aunts and greedy aunts and people supposed to, white family, they leave it down to their kids and everything. I didn't get jacked, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My granddaddy's land, all gone. And we still got some land in Windsor, North Carolina, my mother's side of the family. We still got some land down there. But all that land gone. And then my aunt Mamie, she traveled all over the world. She was a rich, poor black woman. You know, she had like four homes and everything like that. And she wanted to leave some of her inheritance to me. And my brother and sister, we never got anything because her in-laws and everything got in there and everything, like, tied it up and everything. And then our generation, who's supposed to be, these people are 80 years old and they're getting money. Instead of giving it to the young people, saying, okay, well, you guys take this and you guys do this with this and everything. This is how we do in our family. You know, we don't pass anything down because it's like other people have something to build upon. You know, a white man inherits land, inherits business. Here's this, or you got a trust fund, or you're heir to this and everything like that. And so, therefore, we, every generation, we're starting all over again. You know, we're starting all over again. This is the bottom is dropping out on our community, you know, because we have a whole generation of black people who didn't even work. You know, from, like, you look at the 90s to, like, right now, we have a whole generation of black people who are basically working for minimum wage and underemployment and some of everything, you know. And so, and China exported a job overseas, deindustrialization of America. So right now, if we don't talk about nationhood, you know, you guys, you might as well just You're just signing a death warrant for the future generation. If we don't do this, we deserve absolutely no respect.
But Caleb,
we don't deserve to get up. Yeah.
Check it out. Here's the problem. And just like Mr. Holup was saying, is that, hey, look, we're sort of like anomalies, okay? And we got all these other, I don't know, what would you call it, these other non-anomalies, man?
I'm going to get to that point.
But you call all these other people that's in the damn way. You try to explain to them, they're nothing wrong. They want to go ahead and try to shut me down like there's something wrong with you. Something wrong with your ass. You crazy. You need to go to church. And I hear all that bullshit. They're trying to go ahead and redirect the conversation so many fucking times.
I'm going to show you how we're going to do that. Well, go ahead, Brother Holup.
Yeah, you remember you were talking about this before, that we need to, historically, just look at this whole thing. Remember, like, the Negroes in this country, black enterprise is a new thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
Before, if you used to talk about black businesses and all that other stuff, they called
you
a racist.
You were crazy,
right.
Or you were racist. You're a racist, and that basically lasted all the way up until the 1980s.
Right.
It was the 1980s. Before, it was like, when you're talking about a black, even in our popular culture, show me any black, even the only black businessman you ever saw on television was George Jefferson, and that was a comedy. There was never any really serious dialogue about black people employing other black people and everything, because I'll tell you one thing. Even say something like a dry cleaning business or a small construction business. If you have a such and such, or Sanford and Son, people made a joke about that, Sanford and Son, But I'm saying to myself, it could have been done a little better and everything, but I like the gist of it. He tried to work for himself, And so the bottom line is this, and Red Fox talked about that, They were resistant about black people, they didn't know how to sell that. A black man living with his son with a business and everything. That was very groundbreaking for that time period, So the whole thing is this. And even though it had to be a comedy. In other words, basically, when you talk about, I'm going to get into this business right here, we're going to say, you're going to be Stanford's son. It's sort of basically, we have a way of, black people, let me tell you something right now. We have a way of bullying and of psyching ourselves out to defeat. Like I said, I think somebody said that your man, DeLoreau, said the same thing. Nobody wants to be associated with nothing that they feel like they're going to be laughed at or you go away. And the white man knows the psychology about black people, If somebody does something out of the ordinary, you're crazy. You lost your mind. You can't do that. This is the way you're supposed to be. And
I think the one thing they're trying to tell you is, boy, you can't do that. Why are they going to get mad at you? Master Charlie going to get mad at you. That's what they say.
Right. You cannot do that because this is the way. This is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to work all your life, get a paycheck, and retire and die. Look at. I've never seen so many black men. You can tell me the time you're 65, you're just going to get a little Social Security check and just wait to die for the rest of your life. You tell me your whole life. You spent 30, 40 years in some place, and all the dreams you had, you put on hold. And everything like that, so you can just basically live your life and just die. Everything. Look at white people. When you see white people sweat, they're making money. White people are having investments here. They're traveling here. They got this going on here. They're making sure their kids are in the right college and everything. And then go to the Midwest. You think the white people that are working in the steel mills and the factories and everything and the whole house and everything. You think they're not talking about the same, their struggle is not the same as the white people or the black people that's working, trying to organize in McDonald's or fast food. These people are making $35-$40 an hour. $35-$40 an hour, plus all kinds of overtime, Cadillac pension plans, health plans, and everything like that. When white people are working, they're basically getting the benefit. But when you take any sort of black people or any sort of large numbers of us, any profession, look at the wage level and the benefits level of when there's black people working. Because we don't have no position to negotiate. In fact, I don't even with black professionals. And I've seen it with black professionals. And I said, wait a minute here. If you got all this education, skills, and everything, tell me why you got to work a part-time job or you can't keep up with your bills. And you got degree after degree and everything. And this is what's happening. So people don't understand that capitalism, like my brother John Sinclair of the Black Wall Street, I was on the phone with him last night for like an hour. And we were saying the thing, black people don't understand the capitalist system. Going out there getting an education and trying to compete in a job is not enough. Because all we're doing, every time we put more people in the education, I'm saying, yeah, get your education and everything. But when things don't work out the way you say it is, I'm going to tell you why. Because the more you add supply something, it brings the value down. If they had their way, they would pay a civil engineer's minimum wage. They could do that if they could get away with it. If they can bring enough Chinese and Indians over here to do civil engineering jobs, guess what? When you after you $100,000 in debt for student loans for engineering degree, you start off making $20,000 a year. How do you do that? Why? It's the law. It's the market. Law of supply and demand. The system that America was built upon, which is Wall Street and manipulating the stocks, manipulating of labor and control of labor and suppressing labor, has not changed since the country has been founded. And that has not changed. You know?
We have a real juvenile way of looking at reality, man. It's like black folks are now, like I've had conversations on YouTube about forming coalitions with other groups of people. I'm like, are you crazy? How are you going to go into
amazing.
You going to form a coalition with somebody when you're coming into the situation with no leverage? What you think people just want to see us succeed, so they're just going to let us just get along for the ride?
It ain't happened all this long time.
It don't work like that. And the Asians and everybody's out for themselves.
Exactly.
The Asians and the Mexicans have something to trade. Let me give you an example. Mexicans.
Hello, Kayla. I want you to go into that, man. I want to play this again, man. I want to play this little thing again. And this will go ahead and help you out a little bit more. Okay? Listen to Martin Luther King one more time.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today, many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
Yep.
You hear that?
Absolutely 100% right. I read an excerpt from that one time, right? But I never heard the actual speech. I read an excerpt from that one time, you know, and this is what I want to say. 19th century black man, and I'm going to get back to the Mexican thing I was talking about. The 19th century black man built Rosewood, Black Wall Street, Wilmington, Forsyth, Georgia. All these were thriving black communities. Black people spent money with themselves, and we had a thriving culture and a cultural center, a community center. Philadelphia, Illinois. You know, people don't even understand that. There was a black settlement built in 1850 called Philadelphia, Illinois. The white people decided to get rid of it by basically bypassing, not building any highways or railways to the area. So the town sort of like died off a little bit. You know, it's right in the center of Illinois. It's called Philadelphia, Illinois. Okay? I studied these things. There was a black settlement in Baja, California, called Little Liberia, okay? There was another place in Connecticut outside of New Haven called New Liberia, okay? A thriving black community that was independent, okay? Those are the black people of the 19th century, okay? 19th century. Once Chicago, once a thriving black community, until the mass of the black people came move up north, that's where really the problem stayed in, because nobody had the way of absorbing all the people coming in. Chicago, Harlem and New York and everything, like uptown New York, even Greenwich Village, Mulberry Street and everything, used to be thriving black community at one time in New York City, you know? And so, therefore, when large numbers of our people start coming coming up in the early part of the 20th century, that's where all the slums and all that stuff came from. But look at this. The 19th century black man, the black people who came out of the 19th century into the 20th century was open to the idea of nationhood. They're like, look, everywhere we go, we're doing the backbreaking work. When there's a railway to be laid, we're the ones doing it. When there's a canal mine, we're getting killed in coal mines. We're doing all these things and everything like that for peanuts, you know, for somebody else. We're building railways that we got to drive second class in, you know. We're doing the manpower. We're doing all this stuff like that. We're doing all the backbreaking work and everything. We have the labor. White people say, hey, look, you know something? They're right. They do have the labor. If we didn't have their labor, we couldn't do anything. Who's going to basically, black people were sharecroppers in many parts of the rural South all the way up until the 1970s, you know? So therefore, white people say, look, black people are the labor, okay? We need their labor. We don't want to let them think they have any sort of leverage and everything, but they do have some leverage. So therefore, they say, look, how can we stop black people? The only card black people ever had to play, this is very careful. The only card we ever had to play coming out of slavery during Reconstruction was Exodus, the Exodus. You know, that's going to be that's the theme of my novel. ML gets it back to me. He's editing it. I'm going to submit it for publishing. It's going to be published pretty soon. The only card we ever had to play was Exodus, whether Exodus to Kansas or Exodus to Liberia. Okay? When black people talk about leaving the South and everything, we talk about Exodus and leaving. Suddenly, the whole disposition of the white people, he could be the most racist Klan. It got so bad. The Exodus was so powerful that they enacted laws against the Ku Klux Klan and put the Klan out of business in 1817. Yeah, but how did that happen? Yeah, they passed anti-Ku Klux Klan laws. Why? Because black people were so vital to the reconstruction of the South. Now, how do you keep black people in their place and working all the time? And basically, we need the labor, but we can't have white people and black people asking for equal rights. So they pass separate but equal. That's an appeasement, okay? We'll give you equal separate. We'll never separate but equal, right? Then the most important thing, right, what they discovered after Booker T. Washington is this. We have the white philanthropists and white businessmen and white thinkers said, look, we don't know anything about these people. We don't know anything about them. They obviously don't listen to us. They obviously don't listen to us. The preacher and all these people got the preacher and all these people in the black community got the black community here. That's what we listen to, right? So they began to say, look, we're going to start cultivating black leaders, okay, with money. We're going to give them a position, travel expense. And so a whole machine was formed, political class was formed in black America. You know, usually the most often they were the mulatto, light-skinned black people and everything, or probably the descendants of the house slaves and everything. And also, the white people put money into education, not to educate black people, but to basically cultivate a buffer class. Dr. Umar Johnson said this, and also Amos Wilson said this, to cultivate a buffer class of black people, right, to be the go-between and maintaining the status quo and this system. So right. This is what we're up against right now. We're up against a well-entrenched buffer class. And the bottom line is, this is how we fight it. See, one thing they don't like is the fact that when the Internet, you'll never see these people on any blog talk radio. You'll never see them posting YouTube videos. You'll never see them anything. Because anytime they post anything, if they do post anything on blog talk or, on YouTube or anything, it's comments disabled. Okay? A blog, whatever like that, you can't comment on it. Okay? They basically are in bed with the white leftists, or sometimes even the right wing, whoever will do their bidding and finance them, pay for them. And when they project these people on us, right, the average person thinking, oh, he must be the leader. The Smithsonian Institute, right, basically create a whole big museum and library of so-called African-American history. Now, you go to any of these so-called African-American history, who decides what's our history or not? Key people are left out of our history. John Brown Rushmore, okay? Joseph Jenkins Roberts, okay? Edward Wilmot Blodgett, okay? Alexander Cromwell, you know? R. Ford McGill, okay? These were early Pan-Africanists and nationalists of the 19th century. All these people basically had were widely listened to, widely debated, and that was the debate, whether we should have our own nation, spend the next 100 years building our own nation, or stay here in America and fight for equality. The majority of black people said, yes, we want our own nation, okay? But the thing is, who controls the media? Who controls what gets into the eyes and the ears of the average black person? White people do, okay? Now, most white people, you say, well, white people are racist. They'll say, oh, get out of here. We don't need you. That's not the case. Because white people, like I said, they needed black people to basically be in the position they're in. You know, the bottom line is this. If you don't do that, right, then what you're going to have is this. You're going to have an underclass of white people. And what that will lead to is socialism, you know, Marxism, Bolshevikism, Leninism, all of these things. By having white people, having black people as a permanent underclass or a permanent working class or permanent just labor, right, we consume but we don't produce, okay? We don't make anything back on all the money we generate. We can't even stay at $1.2 trillion an hour, right? Same time, like you said, in a clip, Brother Martin Luther King said, they brought white people over there and gave them all these land grants and land colleges and everything. But who was the labor for all that? Who was the bottom labor in the Midwest and everything? Our people were.
And you know what? At that point, and a lot of times at that point, that was sharecropping. The sharecropping. Those were the individuals who was in charge of the share. Those were the share, that's how that sharecropping idea came about, because they was going ahead
and bringing some of them in.
And
not only that, the South and North Carolina, it got so bad when Liberia, when people were exiting, were going to Liberia, starting to go to Liberia on their own in the late 1800s, right? North Carolina passed laws. If you talked about going to Africa or leaving the United States or going up north, it became sedition. You could be arrested and put on a chain gang. That's how bad it was.
Okay, and then and also, here's another one, too. They actually did that in parts of Alabama. Alabama was notorious for that. If you talked about leaving certain counties, they would throw you in jail. Because it was individuals who were waiting to go ahead and get a ride to get the fuck on out of there. See, once you start walking, they didn't really fuck with you. But if you sat around or stood around waiting for a ride, they got you for loitering. Then they would go and throw your ass in jail for 6 months. Say it's for 6 months for loitering. Before you know it,
think about that.
Then you have to pawn yourself out. You can get it reduced if you work 4 months for the such and such over here as a handyman on the farm. This is how they maintain the same system.
Some people had actually done their time, and these fuckers would come and get them again and put them into coal mines and lead their ass down there and work them to death.
I want you to think about this, because this is something that I've touched on before. Now, these people claim that they hate black folks, can't stand black folks, don't want black folks eating in the same place they eat, don't want to be around them. But yet, you would think that these people would love Marcus Garvey.
No, they hated him. They hated Marcus Garvey. Let me tell you something. This is another thing I found. And I found there's a couple of books out there that I look on Amazon, right? And I get excerpts from, but I'm going to end up ordering all these books, right? There's several books out there that really tell the history of the black people in America, Liberia, and South Africa, because sort of similar situation as far as labor exploitation happened in South Africa, too. I'm going to touch on that in a second. What they found out is, I didn't even know this, right? They said the majority of Garveyite people were from the South. Places his strongest support came from Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Virginia, some parts of the Midwest and Indiana, and all these other places and everything. They said the black people that supported Garvey in New York City were the new migrants to New York. You know, the black people that were settled, that had a little bit of money in Harlem, they couldn't stand Garvey. You know, they could not stand him. You know, those are the people who were Garvey's enemies. You know, these people, they thought Garveyites were all migrants, illiterates, and all these other people and everything. So therefore, they were able to paint the picture that Garvey's a thug, he's a stuff like that. But what they found out was that Garvey's movement And then, here's the dangerous part about it. Listen to this. This is how dangerous it is, right? Most of the people who supported Garvey didn't like this agitation for integration, right? The civil rights people were so wicked, they were able to say, Garvey, these people were like, look, we want our own nation. We want out of here. I want to buy some land in Liberia. I want to farm myself in my own land, right? The civil rights people fought so against that, right? Once Garvey's movement like goes in peril, whatever like that, they forced black men that were nationalists to join the civil rights movement, saying, if you don't come marching with us, then you're a coward. You know, if you don't come marching with us for integration, you're a coward. You know, you're going along with the Ku Klux Klan, you're the thing. You know, Garvey was a Klansman and all this kind of stuff like that. This is basically how we feel trapped right now. We're in the same situation. How can you basically go against the civil rights movement when basically they did deliver with the Civil Rights Act and the little bit of jobs and prosperity and the housing and everything? They had that. Because why? Because white America knows if you concede just a little bit, right, they can use that as a propaganda war against us nationals. It's a propaganda war against the nationals. That's why I tell people all the time, stop playing on their ground. We have to raise the stakes up. When we raise the stakes to nationhood, they can't compete with that. You know, that's why I say we got to stop playing with this thing about nationhood. We have to basically do this, you know. All our people that are nation, we have to get our own land. You know, once you have that, there's absolutely nothing they can compete with that. Absolutely nothing they can compete with that. If you're basically telling a scientist or an engineer, whatever like that, sky's the limit and we can build this and everything like that, you're going to have black men coming from all walks of life. I'm telling you right now, you're going to have black men come from all walks of life, like walking off a plantation. They're going to come out of nowhere. Because most black men just doing what they have to do to survive, you know? And we're just doing what we got to do to survive. And they're keeping quiet. And they're listening. Okay, they got the ear open and everything. But when somebody really comes with a real plan for nationhood and statehood and everything like that, the black man is going to really show. The world's going to see something spectacular. But this black man is not going to rise up and we're just basically going to come out here and just do a bunch of talk and do nothing. Because right now, the media, the institutions, everything like that is behind the civil rights movement and have this false perception of integration. You know, that's what it is. You know, as long as they have that illusion, that's why I don't even comment on these people that are feeling news and everything like that, because I know they get invited on MSNBC and Fox News and everything to give the perception that there's some big movement to push for civil rights and all stuff like that. But what's true was majority of black people never was involved in civil rights. You know, majority of black people are Garveyites, are basically nationalistic in their approach in life.
You know don't you see that same thing today when they go ahead and look at the rap game again? Look at how that switched over. Yeah, that switched over, and they got the kids going ahead and doing, the young people going ahead and doing what they're doing today versus
mm-hmm.
what they were doing
mm-hmm.
yesterday.
See? Right, you're all right. I look at rap. I posted some videos up from like the late 80s, early 90s, Third Bass, you know, and all these other groups out there in the late 90s. I remember back when I was in New York, back in the late 90s and everything, we used to go down to Mount Vernon, New York and whatnot, go to White Plains, go down to the Bronx, go down to Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island. We're out there chilling. We're going to Sunrise in Long Island. We're going to Mount Vernon. We're in the Bronx, the White Stone. We're in the White Stone. And we're chilling. And the music and everything back then, you know, was just so, I mean, different. That's
man, you know what?
The other day, right?
This guy come cruising through here, man. It sounds, you can hear his music. It was like doom, doom, doom. And I was in the house, and he was playing Public Enemy coming down the street. Now, the neighborhood I live in, it's kind of mixed, right? And it's the western suburbs of Chicago. And, man, he played that shit, man. And then when I came outside and seen the car, it was a 65 Chevelle or something like that, man.
Mm-hmm.
He was just blowing that music, just blang, blang, blang. And people was looking like, what the fuck? Them white folks didn't understand what the hell that was, especially the older ones. Man, they was used to something else. Used to a bunch of killers.
The bottom line is they took over hip-hop because the bottom line is you got Clear Channel, Radio 1, and all these people decided that, you know, it's black people's ultimate goal is to integrate with white people. When I listened to hip-hop back then, I did not give a damn what white people listened to. You know, when I was coming up, white people didn't listen to the same music we listen to. You know, I know you guys remember that. They listened to their own thing. We had our own thing, you know. You got one or two white boys that we knew that I grew up with that was into rap and hip-hop and everything. Maybe the only black people, white people at a house party and everything. We had our own music and everything like that, you know. We had our own way, our own swagger, our own everything. Fast forward now, everybody, you got Miley Cyrus and all this whoever these rappers, I can't even remember their names, now talking about collaborating. What the heck is that? You got a Disney Channel girl and a hardcore thug rapper collaborating on a record, man. But I mean, it's just mind-boggling how far, you know. You tell me this is not social experiment, you know. So
Look at some of the ones who was on the Disney Network and all the other stuff. A lot of them are all fags and lesbians now, man. Too. Look at them.
Yeah, that's what they were pushing. Who controls? Let me give you an example. Like when rap starts spiraling out of control with this West Coast rap, you know, with the gangs and all stuff like that. And people in New York are like, yo, what's going on with L.A. and whatnot? You know, they're talking about killing and all stuff like that. And we were in the hip-hop, it was about the music and everything. How you could battle, how you could flow and all this stuff like that. We get all this stuff. And then you find out how much money these rappers are making. We're like, wow, we didn't know anybody, you know, that we looked at one or two in New York, only one or two rappers made $1 million. Oh, Run DMC, LL, and MC Light. Maybe a couple people made $1 million, right? But it was no real money into it, you know? Then so all of a sudden corporate America was like, wait a minute here. The money is marketing it to middle America. You know, and that's where the problem came in. Rap became
to be outrageous was more than money.
And pushing the envelope. And then now it's to the point now where the suburbs, the white suburbia, is now dictating what's hot and what's not. How is it that they're gonna control corporate America and white suburbia are now telling you who's gonna decide who's number one? Like Jay-Z, Holy Grail. What the hell is that all about? You know, he's out here, you know, old with all these rich white people and whatnot, still talking about Marcy Project. You know, I'm like, yo, what is going on? And nobody stopped to say, yo, look, Jay-Z, you know, are you a gangster? You what? What are you trying to do? You talk about drugs and selling drugs. You brag about your start in life came by selling flipping a key, $500,000, whatever you say it was. And everything like that. Granted, you're making $1 billion, you got Beyonce and everything like that. But why should we worship you? Why should we basically give you a pass? You know, and how can we, it's like hypocritical. We cannot basically talk about cleaning black America up when we're celebrating the people that's destroying us. You know, the people like that. I believe that if you're going to do that sort of music, it should be like a pornography. You're marginalized. It's something you do in your spare time or away from things. Just like anything else, any sort of vice you do should be in your own privacy. The culture and everything like that should be about black people and black people unity and the good things we share together. You know, that's what the culture should be about. You know, and it's not like that anymore. Everything is conflict. Everything is murder. Everything is violence. Everything is all these things like, you know, that we have going on in our community. And it's celebrated. You know, what you see right now, according to our culture and what's going on right now, is black America is dead.
Yeah, that is a problem. And who's going ahead? One of the things I see is that it's not totally dead because you got the individuals out here. You got some individuals out here trying to go ahead and bring it up and trying to keep it alive. But we don't have that strong media apparatus to go ahead and push a real good message. Because if you ever really notice, you go ahead and you notice you can't sit and watch any type of TV without really getting sick. If you got your head on straight, you can get sick. Because you don't see no real images of us. You see all that negative stuff.
I'll recommend this. The Bounce Channel is pretty good. You know, the Bounce Channel is pretty good. The Bounce Channel, new network. I don't know if they got it where you at yet, but the Bounce Channel, you got, I don't think it's on DirecTV, but you got Verizon VH1 carries it, you know. The Bounce Channel, all they do is play black movies from the 50s, 70s, 80s. They play old school stuff, you know, and a lot of movies that we say.
How do you make that? But here's the thing, how do you make that attractive?
Well, if the Bounce Channel's doing very well. The Bounce Channel's doing very well. It's a network, you know? It's like it's basically
if you go ahead, if you look at their rating system, what age group is really checking that out?
All age groups. It's older,
the
younger,
age group
everything.
That really needs to check that out is the young minds.
Right, and the young people are coming on because they basically got bounce beats, this music and everything, got music videos, stuff like that. But basically, you can tell somebody's in the boardroom saying, no. You can tell somebody saying, there's a gatekeeper there, you can tell, you know, what gets on and what doesn't get on, you know, the type of movies they play and the type of stuff like that, themes that they have and everything like that, called TV Our Way. In other words, basically, it's almost like having Ebony and Jet magazine on television. That's how Bounce seems like to me. You know, and it seemed like, man, I was like, dang, man, I watch Bounce. I've been watching movies from, like, the 70s and whatever like that. I was like, man, I haven't seen this in a year. I haven't seen Cormac Earl in how many years, you know?
Mm.
And I'm like, wow, man. I'm like, you know, they be playing movies. I'd be like, God, I forgot all about that, you know? And I'm like, it makes me feel good because what we're trying to do is erase any sort of thing that basically black people were people outside of conflict.
Let me ask you a question real quick. How do you feel about the NAACP having that meeting with the Ku Klux Klan over the weekend?
I mean, I'm like this. I have no idea what's the point of that. What's the point of the NAACP, first of all? And another thing, like, I'll give it back to things. The biggest thing the white man ever did was free the NAACP. People don't even know that for the first 50 years, most of the presidents of the NAACP were white. You know, the NAACP was founded and funded by white people in the AGA movement, you know. The whole idea of the NAACP is to basically, because before the NAACP came along, white America didn't know what we thought. They didn't, when they did the investigation or when they polled black people and interviewed black people, debrief them, what do you think about this, whatever you think about that. They feared communism, they feared anything, race riots and all that. What do you think about this? And they found that, well, what do you think about America? Most black people could care less about America at the time. It's that dangerous. So most black people felt that America, life in America was hopeless. You know, most black people in America didn't have any allegiance to anything to America. So what they did was they founded groups like the Urban League and the NAACP and everything, funding them, put black faces there to basically create this thing called gradualism, you know? And basically, before this, black people were like, yo, this is what we have, Black Wall Street. Many of the NAACP leaders, you know, were critical of the Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They said, it's back to black separatism. We should be trying for integration. Now, why would anybody basically be against black people having their own anything? You know, it's simple. Control. The whole idea of the NAACP and all these groups like that, the people that's behind them, they believe in their heart and soul that black and white people should mix together and the races should disappear. And the problem of black people is the fact that they're black. And
but you know, the biggest white, ones that are pushing that we all people and all that other shit, you got some Bible humpers, you know, as white, but you got too many black folks going ahead pushing that, and that's the most dangerous part.
But the thing is, check this out. Let me give you an example.
Almost everyone is going ahead and speaking on our behalf when they put that mic, that camera in front of them.
Right.
Just about every last one of them are going ahead and saying that. Like, I had to play that clip earlier about, again, I played it a few times about Martin Luther King because you don't even hear his kids saying that kind of message.
No. But check this out. Now, the premier black organization in there that was promoting nationalism and black unity was a church called the African Methodist Episcopal Church, okay, Henry McNeil Turner, Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, you know. He urged, after Reconstruction was gone, he urged black people to get the heck out of America. That's what he said. The other black pastors that settled in New York, Detroit, and everything went on a campaign to destroy this man, you know, destroy his thing. They said that he basically, his organization, congregation, nothing but illiterates, and all this kind of stuff like that, that we should be fighting for social change. And he argued that the Reconstruction failed. White America is never going to change. The black people should basically fund their own way to get out of here and build their own nation in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and he's all eventually settled in South Africa. Most people don't even know the ANC and the Pan-African Congress is founded by African Americans. They don't even know that. There was an African American settlement that eventually became a place called Sophia Town. outside Johannesburg was settled by African-American settlers in South Africa. And so Henry McNeil Turner was a Pan-Africanist. He believed that black people should go to places like Nigeria, take over land, and bring education, to settle in land and get out of America, okay? Now, to basically counter Henry McNeil, Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, white people start recruiting black churches, okay? You know, it's a denominational thing. The whole idea is to sell you on the idea of that. Don't even worry about building life in America, in this life. Worry about life in the hereafter. You know, that message of the promised land was forgotten, and the message of dying and going to heaven came into play. Okay, and that's what basically happened after the demise of Henry McNeil Turner. The black church, black organizations, all these people basically put some message on black people. Basically, your salvation is here in the afterlife, whatever like that. Keep your eyes on the prize. All these things with integration, being at the mercy of white people, begging another race of people for things. Don't be independent. Don't do all this stuff and seek freedom in this life, your land and milk and honey in this life. And the whole narrative changed. And they selectively, books, anybody that basically preached about the promised land was written out of history. All the people that preached the nonsense that you see right now with integration and all the stuff like that, and agitation for integration, those are the people they wrote many books about, they published multiple times about, they re-quoted, quoted, to the point where you think that our whole history was about trying to integrate with white people.
Yeah,
and it never
was. Yeah, because they also rewriting the history books in Texas. You see that deal?
Oh, they omit. It's not just writing them. They omit them. I've discovered so many things that they've omitted from history. I'm like, wait a minute. How come Marcus Garvey had the largest mass movement in American history? Besides the mobilization of World War II, Marcus Garvey was the second largest mass mobilization, and he's only given a paragraph, you know?
Mm.
He's given a paragraph. He came here, he tried to lead black to Africa. Black people rejected him. He got deported for because he was a criminal. He used mail to deport. That's all you know about Marcus Garvey. You think that's any accident? No. Somebody is controlling the narrative. You think they're going to put money behind really researching Garvey's works and everything like that and make that available to the masses of black people in the educational system? Okay. No. And then again, who controls the educational system? Who controls what our people think? The educational system dictates what type of themes are in our movies, our plays. All these things that basically influence black people are chosen by other people that decide who's going to be our heroes, who's going to be our icons, who's going to be our heroines. All these things are basically chosen because there's big money through the institutions that do this.
And it ain't getting no better. It just seems to get worse and worse every day.
That's why the internet is the only weapon we have is the internet.
But you look at this. Like I said, you know, this they had so much support. They had so many people coming out after that verdict of Trayvon Martin. Where everybody at now?
No, like I said, all you have to do is wait till the next day. The white people know. Wait till the football season starts and the basketball season starts, and Negroes be right back there with their jerseys on. You know, in the sports bars and having the football parties, getting high. Everybody, by next year, people you say Trayvon Martin, people won't even remember his name. They know us.
Yeah. Well,
they know us very, very well.
Yeah. And it's getting fucking worse. I don't see nothing getting better.
You know, the bottom line is this. If you don't know anything about nation building land, at least you can be talking about it. And then what happens is when you start talking about it, you start doing your research. Well, what I do is I look at history. What do people do when they're in the situation we were in? Now, a lot of black people make the mistake, right? This is why I fought Nation of Islam. They always attack Israel and the Jews. Now, we could debate the Jews and the treatment of the Palestinians back and forth, right? But when you look at what they were about, they're like, wait a minute here. Because I really believe that their persecution in Germany and everything was a little overblown, you know? But the basic idea that they should have their own land and everything is so powerful that the world thought, okay, they want their own land. And most Jews, Do you know before World War II, most Jews were dead set against that? You
right,
can get into
right.
a fist fight with Jews in Germany, Italy, and you told them we need our own land, somebody would knock you out. I'm a German. I'm Spanish. I'm an American. But after World War II, the Zionist movement, which started during Theodor Herzl 40 years before Nazi Germany, after that, it gained popularity. So people say, you know something, this guy Theodor Herzl, who talked about we should have our own nation, maybe he has something there.
You know,
and
but
people
but you
don't
got,
even
you
notice
got black
that
people
Theodore,
here
that
go
Theodore
here, they're going to whoop your ass. We're going to talk about leaving America today.
Yeah, but the thing is, Theodor Herzl was influenced by Edward Wilmot Blyden. They were friends. Edward Wilmot Blyden was the founder of Pan-Africanism, you know, and he basically, Theodor Herzl said, well, if the black people can go to Liberia and settle in their original land and build a modern state in Sierra Leone, we Jews, we should have our own state of our own. Then we won't have to worry about being discriminated against. Most Jews at the time in England, France, wherever, were still fighting for integration and be accepted. And they would have to hide their ethnicity and their religion. Theodor Herzl said, wouldn't it be nice if we had our own society where we could be free? We don't have to be worried about being persecuted. Most Jews thought he was crazy. They said, what's the point of all that? You know, what's the point of building a society of Jews and everything? And to this day, to tell you, I'm telling the truth, most Jews don't live in Israel, but they support
right.
it. And the psychological thing. That's what I'm telling black people in America. Even if you don't live in this new land, you wouldn't tell me you wouldn't support it psychologically and materially?
No, because
and
they don't feel they're part of it. And see, but it's twofold because you got people that you got brothers and sisters over there feel that, but we don't belong there either. It's a hard, dusty uphill battle that we got to fight.
That's why I work with Liberia. You know, I work with Liberia. I have a whole organization with nothing but Liberians and the descendants of African American settlers in Liberia. And they work with me and they're like, yeah, you guys don't know what you're missing by you guys not helping us build this country over the last century. And that's what I'm working with. Now, whether it's going to be Liberia or someplace else, you know, you have Namibia. Namibia has less than 1.2 million people in that vast, big country. Do you know if black people came there in large numbers, we could probably be the majority? You know?
And I looked at Gabon also, man. Did you see the stuff on Gabon?
Yeah, Gabon's a nice country, you know? Beautiful.
Real nice.
Yeah. You know,
but a lot of us don't go ahead and see that. Hey, look, and something else that I saw that hey, a lot of the a lot of minerals and stuff being taken out of there, but they just Europeans are coming in and tearing up just destroying the place, taking everything out of there.
Africans and Native Africans, they don't understand. See, the reason why the white man does not want African Americans in Africa is see this conversation we're having. That's their worst nightmare, and already right now. You ask Warlord X, they're basically tracking the white supremacists and people in South Africa have me on file. They got all of us on file and everything like that. They're basically tracking all our activities on the internet and stuff like that. And they're noticing now that youth over in South Africa and Zimbabwe are basically reading even have to give props to the New Black Panther Party, even the New Black Panther Party rhetoric. You know, we don't go that far. But they don't like the fact that more and more black youth are being radicalized, what they call radicalized by Pan-Africanist and black power ideology, you know? And so, therefore, basically, they don't want black people in America coming in because we're the most militant out of all black people on earth. You know, they want Africa to be their personal safari place where they can come in, sleep with little girls, hunt, kill animals, go and do everyone. It's Africa. They don't see Africa building civilization. They don't like that. You know,
that's their playground.
That's their playground.
They feel is theirs, and they still feel that's when you, a lot of places in Africa. You got people over there, and I don't like when I go here and hear brothers and sisters over there, you know, defending white folks over there.
They always defend white folks. I keep trying to tell them.
I say, you know, the main reason that you got so many poor folks over there is because of them peckerwoods you got over there. You let them go in and call your friends.
They don't see it that way.
I see guys over there. I see
I see young girls marrying these white dudes that's 80, 90 years old. And I also see these,
yep.
These young guys marrying women, white women that's 80, 90 years old.
70, 75 years old. She wants an African lover. You know, she's sitting there bored, and so she's going, she got
money. No. Listen to me. Check it out. It's guys over there marrying white, old white women that's just as old.
Oh, I know. I've seen that.
And I was like, what the deal? Just to get out of there. I mean, come on, man. That shit don't make no damn sense. Where you fucking going with that? And shit, is she just going ahead and marry you cause so she can get that young penis? So, yo, she ain't going to put you in the wheel.
Just sad, man. I look at what they did to the continent, and the bottom line is, I said, look, you know, a lot of Africans, they look at us and everything like that, and they get mad with us when they want to talk about us. So I say, yeah, but I tell you one thing: say what you want about African America, even going to the worst ghetto in America, ain't no white man gonna walk down the street hand in hand with a 13-year-old black girl.
And they'll go ahead and they feed into that whole thing that the black Americans are lazy. I get that a lot. You know, they lay
really now.
How much history do you know about what's going on? I know more about what's going on in your land than you know about what's going on with me.
Check it out.
You can call me lazy.
Check it out.
Life can't be lazy, you motherfucker.
Check it out. This is what kills me. Is they say that, right? But yet, Africans are moving out of America in droves because they say they work over here is too hard. They said, I got to go 10 hours a day. And you got Kenyans committing suicide. There's a huge suicide rate among Kenyans and Ugandans that say they want to come back home, and they're coming back, and they're not sending the money over that they thought they were going to send. They thought they want to come over here and just stomp or step over black people in America. They don't understand the competition, and a lot of them didn't have the academic credentials and whatnot because Africa's school system is not that good. So they come over here, and they're scrutinized. It ain't like when over there in Africa, if you can read and write and have a high school education on this level right here, you can get a top position over there, you know? When you come over here and people really scrutinize you, you've got competition of white, black, Asian, everybody and everything, and they're like, wow, man, I really got to compete here, and I got to work hard, you know, and I can't be late, I got to get fired, you know, and my parents can't talk to the minister of this to put me here, and I don't have the connection and everything. And they got to compete in America, and they get upset, like, wow. And you know what they do, what most Africans do? They work, drive cab, and they do stuff like that. They're not really making it corporate America like we are. You know,
I know some people that's running. Sure. I know some people from Africa that's running. It's from Uganda, Kenya, in particular. Kenya, Uganda. They go ahead and they're being invited to come to these like Turkey and some of these Arab speaking spots, man. And they get treated like shit. I know this young lady right now. She's in Turkey, and she's like, man, she was at? I think she was in Minnesota for a minute. She lived down here in Chicago. And she's like, right now, she can't wait to get the fuck out of there because she thought that Chicago and some places in the U.S. was racist. She said, you ain't never experienced racism until you come take your black ass to Turkey.
Well, yeah, especially now we black people in America probably won't get it as bad, you know, because like I said, I know a lot of Turks and everything.
They won't. From here going over there, they won't get it as bad. But you go ahead and you come from Africa, going over there, they treat you like shit.
Same thing in Europe, you know, and everything. And so they're basically like, well, why does black people in America get so much respect outside of America?
And it creates a little bit more animosity sometimes when people go.
Check this out. When they come over to America, they're like, well, this is white America's trick. They purposely treat Africans better than African Americans, and they give them the impression, well, I like America because I get treated better than Africa. All I do is say I'm not African American, and I get treated better. But you go to like England, Spain, everything, and Italy, they're killing African immigrants, you know? You know, and the bottom line, they know they come over to America instead of joining with black people in America and saying, look, my brother, they're like, well, I got a good thing here. All I have to do is just basically say what a great country America is and say you're lazy, and white Americans treat me like gold and whatnot. You know, I get invited to parties and everything. Why? Because you're cooning for them. You're shuffling.
Yeah, man,
them, you know?
Man, oh man. Because, yeah, and here's something that I saw. It's a group called Refugee One. I'm going to put their ass on blast. Refugee One here in Chicago, right? They bringing people from the Congo. Okay, and I was always curious why they bring, you know, they bringing people over from the Congo, and they ain't setting them up near other black people. They separate. They keep them from black people in America.
Oh yeah, they do that all the time. They keep them from
check
black
it out, and they bring them to lily white areas.
putting them in these all of the white schools, these rich white schools.
Yeah, and it's going all over.
And the kids come out of school and don't want to have shit to do with black Americans.
I have some more boys, man, Liberian brothers. They tell me, they don't understand. All my Liberian boys, they tell me, you know, this is what white people say. When I first came over here, they said, stay away from black people in America. And he's like, my boy Will, he's like, man, after one white person dissed him, he said, man, forget y'all people. And Liberians know that white people in America are the ones who destroyed their country. You know, and they don't forget that. And the bottom line is, they're like, yeah, you know, Liberians are settling in Providence, Rhode Island, Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, Maine, places where there's not a lot of African Americans at, you know, and they're all lily white and everything. You got Liberians now who are going from Minnesota to North Dakota. And I had to warn them. I said, do you know North Dakota is a freaking Aryan Nation? That's Aryan Nation territory. You know, these people are trekking to North Dakota. And some people, one of my boys, sent me pictures from Helena, Montana. I said, are you crazy? You know,
yeah.
I said, yeah. He said, you think about buying a farm in Montana? I said, Montana, Idaho, are you freaking nuts? I'm like, you know, and these people have no idea the danger, you know, that they're in, you know, in America, you know, and I'm like this. And so basically, you know, white people are trying to use Africa. They're giving them free education, housing, and all stuff like that to say, see, America's not a racist country. Look at these Africans. But yet, right now, the crime rate among African immigrants is rising. You got Somali gangs, Liberian gangs, Ghanaian gangs, and places like Philly, New York, and everything.
What's the reason?
You know what Africans don't they say? They say, well, because they were good when they came here, but they got hooked to African American culture.
Here's the reason. Because when they got here, right, they start realizing the only way they can go ahead and do things is if they stick together amongst themselves, not against other black folks, because they can't run out and go get no job and do this. So they also go ahead and pick up all the other ills that's on the street for blacks that
yeah,
were
right,
been
right,
here most
right,
of their
right,
life.
Right. Yep,
same
yep.
fucking
so the
thing.
Bottom,
they go ahead
thing,
and they want
yep.
to stick with each other and go ahead and have the Liberian, that Ghanaian gangs. And here in Chicago, you got fucking Pakistanis going ahead and join the gangs out here.
Yep, every ethnic group has gangs, you know. Every ethnic group has gangs, you know. But when you talk about gangbangers, it's always African-American. Most of these gangs are from people from the other countries. They're from the islands, they're from Caribbean, they're from Trinidad, the Trinities, the Dominicans, Haitians and everything, but we get stuck with the bill. We get stuck paying the bill for everybody else and whatnot, you know? And then what gets me is every time you see an African or whoever commits a murder in this country, whatever like that, they never specify, well, he's a recent immigrant from Liberia. They won't say that. They just put a black face up there, and then the same African immigrant say, yep, see these people, that's why we don't hang around them. Well, you do some, and I had to break it down. One girl posted a thing, look at these people, these African Americans. So I posted a thing. I said, look, a native of Liberia, he was doing this. He was that one guy. Remember that one guy who was arrested? He raped and killed his own daughter. He's a Nigerian, you know. And basically, people are like, oh, put his face on the thing, whatnot. And no one ever mentions his nationality, right? Why? Because they weren't first.
And these people don't fucking get that. You over here, you ain't from, you black, period. That's what it is when you're in America.
Well, they don't do that. When they go back to their country, they're like, oh, I was such an angel over there. Any crime you saw over there is a black American. When they're basically doing it. They're doing the same thing white immigrants used to do, Italians used to do with us. They will commit murders and everything and dump them in the black community and say black people did it. You know, we're the scapegoat for everybody's problems, you know?
Oh, of course, of course, of course. And then it goes back to my topic of my show, man. It's Trayvon Martin, how the pulpit pimps are getting richer. They ain't throwing
mm-hmm.
that money over there into the community to go ahead and try to solve this issue. They go ahead justifying what's going on. Oh, we need more money. We need more money.
Listen to Al Sharpton, right? Every time on one of his shows, I have more respect for Ed Schultz than I do Al Sharpton. You know, Al Sharpton gets up, you know, on the best show. Yeah, we came a long ways, but we got to keep striving because I believe in America. I'm like, you don't believe in America. You know, I follow Al Sharpton since I was a kid, whatnot. All the, how can you basically say all this stuff when I'm coming up, the Toronto boy, and suddenly now you're this mainstream politician that talks about America and we all Americans and all this kind of crazy stuff and everything? I'm like, man, get out of here with all that. You know, if we're all Americans, then why isn't that we're the ones suffering? White people out there enjoying their life, you know? They know
exactly.
We're the one.
He has a lot to do with a lot of us suffering, because if you look at where he came up when he started being popular, and his message then, if he can't have that same message today, because his message was similar to what that shit that clip that Dr. King was saying. We're going to Washington to get our check.
Now it's not like that. Now it's, we need to work with LGBT people, gays, and all these other people. And illegal immigrants. Well, I'm like, wait a minute, Harry, this is how I feel about the illegal immigrant situation, right? You know, I don't have nothing against anybody, right? If you can get away with making money in this country illegally and get away, hey, go right ahead. Hey, well, fine, you know, it's not my thing. But don't expect me to cast my vote, you know, for you, because the moment if I came to your country, in Mexico, and tried to do something and everything illegally, you'd throw me under the jail, you know? And now you got Mexicans who don't even ask for our help. They're basically pushing black people out of whole areas that used to be black, Compton, Crenshaw, all these areas used to be black in South Central Los Angeles, now all Latino.
But you look at what Al Sharpton's doing and the rest of them. They want to talk about everybody else's problem and get us to go ahead and support talking about everybody else's problems.
Now, those days are over.
Those days are over.
Hold up, man.
Chime in on this, man. I bet you went to sleep on
this,
man.
Yeah, I ain't supporting nobody's cause but ours.
That's it, man.
I don't discriminate. I ain't got no issues. You know, to each his own, do your own thing. But don't expect me to be a soldier for your cause. It ain't happening.
They want to be fools. We out there jumping off everybody. We're going down the tubes and whatnot.
Check it out, when you listen to that, when you watch MSNBC and you hear that them clips, when you hear that commercial with Al Sharpton, he's definitely not pointing to the ills of the community. He's talking about everybody else and go ahead and put African American at the end of his speech.
Maybe that's the problem with Obama. Obama thinks that white people are black. See, white people have a issue when you don't deal with them.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? Because he's talking about going into Syria, and the white folks are saying, wait a minute, what are you talking about going to Syria? I need a job over here right now. We need to take care of what's going on at home.
And I would like to see him go to South Central Los Angeles, to tell you the truth. I mean, South Side Chicago, to tell you the truth, you know? Right? He could send some federal troops out there. If he could just basically say, look, we're going to take a one-year moratorium in this area, coordinate this thing, have checkpoints and everything, you would basically clean that area up and whatnot. You'd probably have a real estate boom.
Here in Chicago, L.A., sending troops ain't the fucking answer. One of the things keep your asses out of this area, because you got people in these areas that's trying to do stuff. Stop with your propaganda campaign trying to tear these people down that's trying to do stuff. You got spies in the fucking neighborhood that's trying to do stuff, and you got them going ahead being funded by outside sources trying to tear people down. That, stay the fuck away from us. Let us build up. That's what I say.
Bob, what do you think about, me personally, I'm like this. It bothers me that Memorial Day weekend, you look at it, it's like 49 people shot in Chicago. You know, and you got people, and the problem with that is, you got people saying, man, I can't wait to get the heck out of here. Good people end up leaving the area. They're like, I can't take it, I'm getting out of here. And what you have is a brain drain in areas like Chicago, Detroit. That's what you have. If you can't get to the black middle class.
Let me tell you about Chicago, because Detroit was a whole lot different, the whole different ballgame. In Chicago, you ain't got a whole lot of us go ahead and really in control a whole lot of shit anyway, because you got a lot of black people here going to white folks for jobs. And one of the things that I be pushing is fuck them any goddamn way. Go ahead, you got a lot of vacant lots still in Chicago that you need to go ahead and set up your own fucking farm and build some shit from it.
How do you do that if you can't secure it, you know, if you can't protect what you got, you know? If you can't protect
you
got, somebody,
see, that's why this other brother was supposed to call in, and I wanted him to go ahead and tell, because he got a lot of insight on what's going on.
You know Detroit 300? When they were basically out there, and I just found
out
that one
of the dudes, I ain't heard from them all time.
Well, now, let me tell you something. I just found out that one of the dudes, I don't know if you remember this, when I first started my radio show back in 2009, one of the dudes from Detroit 300 was on my show. They were Big Styles, Big Six, so one of them. But he was on my show a couple of times. He was talking about that. He said, yeah, what we do is we patrol neighborhoods. And I didn't know who he was or whatnot, but he was like, yeah, just that the thing. And I put it all together when that's Detroit 300. He was on my show. He was like, yeah, we're Detroit. This is what we do. We have ex-police. We do this today, okay? And like I said, but the whole thing is Detroit 300 is a good idea. You know, when the brothers, man, when you – it's something about my personal maternal instinct, man. When I hear about this, I posted the other day about a one-year-old brother in Brooklyn was killed by a stray bullet, a gang shootout, killed. One-year-old robbed from his life, man. You know, and like I said, as men, if we can't basically – you know, if we're in a situation where we can't protect our babies, man, you know, it's like, you know, it gets to the point where people just basically get hopeless and they just end up listening to people like Al Sharpton and all the NAACP and all this. Because, so you know, people just, that's how beaten down people are. You know, we have
look,
to come
man,
with a plan.
Look, man, it's like this. To me, let me put it to you like this. Let me tie it into this Syria thing here, okay? The only reason the U.S. going on over there is for money. Money and money, okay? They're going to make money shooting off their own bombs. They're going to make money going ahead, trying to get other people to go ahead and try to get involved. And they make money by going ahead, getting these people asking, begging for help, okay? And I really feel that any of that damn, if there was some gas shot off, the U.S. has something to do with the gas being shot off so you can go ahead and get the U.S. involved, okay?
It had a lot to do with them going ahead and controlling the government.
You look at the same thing over here. Keep this place in turmoil and upset, and it's about money and money. Same thing in Africa. The brothers and sisters over there fighting in these places, these war-torn areas, but it's you look at who's providing the weapons. The U.S.
Right.
is providing the weapons to both sides,
right.
All sides, third
right.
faction.
Right.
doing the same shit. And Asia's going to, all this shit is for money.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. I understand that. You understand. We understand that, right? I don't know anything about the Arab world. I know some of it about Syria and everything. As far as I'm concerned, Syria is another wannabe white country. I don't know. I don't want to see a war over there. This ideal thing. But when I look at the situation that's going on in the Congo, Africa, Central Africa, Mali, the streets of Chicago, Detroit, and everything, that's really my concern. You know, I don't really,
and that's what I'm saying.
Know,
look, here in Chicago.
Whatever, hold on, let me tell it
to you. Chicago, you're looking at a damn near 500 to 600 average murders going back as fucking far as I can remember, even before I was fucking born. Okay, this shit going back fucking 40, 50, 60 years here. And it's the same thing in the Congo, and here in Chicago, these niggas ain't going ahead and making their own fucking assault weapons. They buying them from outside the fucking area. That's the same thing in Africa. They getting the shit from outside the fucking area. The bombs and all that other shit ain't no homemade shit. They go ahead getting that shit from outside the Africa, outside of Africa. And how they go ahead and purchasing that stuff is from the minerals in the ground. And these fuckers over here bringing in drugs over here to go ahead and swing about more weapons, so they be shooting at each other.
Right.
It's the same fucking mindset.
How do we, you and me, and all of us over here, take a stand, a position against all this? How do we take a position?
My biggest thing is this. You know what? Keep on doing what you're doing. Try to come together, and I try to go ahead and sell. For me, I try to put together little plans to sell little products here and there. I got some people going ahead selling my stuff to try to go ahead and deal with the babies and the sisters who got the babies who want to protect the babies. Some of these niggas out here, I don't want to fuck with no more, because I feel I want to cut their goddamn throats, because I'm sick of the stupid shit I hear out of them. I want to deal with them no fucking more, because it's fucking pathetic. I'd rather throw some of these motherfuckers in front of a moving train because they on some silly ass shit. But I want to go ahead and try to protect the babies and some of our elders. Some of them, because some of these motherfuckers, they stupid as hell, because they go ahead.
Yeah, let me give you an example. Well, in areas where I know where I live at, and I deal with a lot of senior citizens and everything, tell me why I got a senior citizen pushing 70, she got to go toe with some thug out here and whatnot, you know, because she dared to tell them. She
you know, somebody called the police. It's not funny, but, you know, somebody called the police on this thug, right? And he was blasting me at 2 o'clock in the morning, blasting me, right? And so anyway, the next day, whatever, he confronted her. You were the one who called the police on him. I didn't call the police on you. And she's like, yeah, yeah. She got in his face, and she said, yeah. She goes, she was an old lady. She goes, yeah, come on. They're out there throwing down, you know. So this dude's going to fight an old woman, you know. This is what
that's the mentality.
Right,
see
now.
What I'm saying? These fuckers, they so fucking cowardly. They'll fight women and old women. They'll fight young girls. They'll fight girls and ladies, a female, quicker than fight some of these other motherfuckers. They go get a pistol, go ahead, shoot at another fucker. And they'll shoot up.
Other
cowardly
you know?
Fucker. They gonna hit some people, hit young people. They ain't got. Got people that
yeah,
nothing
Rob,
to do with it. Little babies, girls, they ain't shit here. That's what you have going on here. It ain't
right.
No real hardcore motherfuckers here. A lot of punks.
Right. But the thing is, those real thugs, you know, punks or not, they're running the community. You know?
They ain't running
the
community.
No, but
They not running the community because they shooting from a distance. You ain't got a whole lot of motherfuckers running up on you shooting. They throwing bullets. And you, there's a difference in going ahead, aiming, you know, going, taking aim, taking a deep breath, and squeezing off a round. That's a difference. They just going ahead and just throwing bullets and just slinging them like that in the direction. That's what you got here. And it's a goddamn game to some of these fuckers.
I lost a lot of people
that same way, and I'm tired.
So,
I can't do that shit.
I lost three cousins earlier.
Me and him, we don't go at it. I'm trying to go ahead and be patient with them, and the way they go ahead and try to approach them, and I go ahead and I keep my mouth shut because some of them fuckers be saying some crazy shit. I want to pick up something and knock the shit out of their ass with. But that's where we got to go ahead. But in order to go ahead and make a strong army, there's some of them that's involved in that shit that don't want to do it at all. And so those are the ones we're trying to go after, the ones who don't want to be involved in that shit, just the ones that need protection from these fuckers forcing them to do stupid shit.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, the whole thing is this. If we had our own land, we'll be able to provide wealth, like you said, the Martin Luther King. You know, it was the Homestead Act, which was the one he was talking about. They basically gave land and money and grants and everything and training to do this. That's what the government does. It says, this is what we want to generate revenue. You know, if we don't do this, we're going to have all these angry white men doing it here, and we can have a revolution in this country. So they said, we got land, we're going to do this. And they basically made sure they got our black people in line to be the permanent labor class and everything. Black people were taught that if we work hard and be obedient, we could rise to the level of so-called civilization like they are. But white people already come over here on the lower level than we were, you know, coming from Ireland and all these other places. They were given land. And some of our black people had to wait until the white people got to a certain level. Now, those white people are millionaires or billionaires and descendants, you know. And we're still sitting there waiting for crumbs.
Here's something, man. You won't see no farm bureau over there in New York City, in Philadelphia, Chicago. You won't see it in some of these big cities. But you take a little trip going out to, you know, just about maybe 50, 60 miles outside the city limits, you see farm bureau offices all over the fucking place. And I bet you walk your black ass in there, they're going to be shocked to see you go up in there because they ain't set up for you.
Also, Rob, what do you think about
that's the stuff that Martin Luther King was talking about was the farm bureaus. That's what
right.
They got all these little fucking counties. I'm looking, I was like, I've seen this shit.
Yeah, every county got the farm bureaus. The farming is basically part of the livelihood and everything. Now, what do you think about this? And I've had this conversation with a lot of people before. Black people have been basically, and I'm guilty of it too, you know, we basically have basically created a situation where we look down upon farming. Oh, slavery, sharecropping, and everything. We look at the farmer
exactly.
Like, oh, you know, how do we get to the point where a farming becomes noble? Like I said, the perfect example is.
You got to tell the truth. I'll get you right away because we all know where you're going. Tell the truth
mm-hmm.
about farming. Okay, tell the fucking truth of how much money is involved with it. Because I
visited
here in Illinois, and I was shocked to go ahead and see that this one guy went to his goddamn farm, and he was bringing down over $200,000 a year on his fucking farm. And it wasn't
a farm year, when you sell your crop, harvest your crop, and everything like that, you're making a few hundred thousand dollars for yourself, you know, and then you're only working part of the year.
just,
you know?
It ain't just that $300,000. It's these subsidies, and then he's selling part of his harvest to these bigger fucking corporations because they set up in every fucking county.
Yeah, you sell it to the combine. You sell your farming. You harvest your crop and you sell it to the grain elevator and everything. And you get your money and everything. The letter of credit is released to your bank. You want that when they waive your harvest and everything like that. You take that to the bank and everything, and you get your funds right there. Plus, a lot of times your money's already paid. Half of it's already given to you up front. Through subsidies and everything. So farming, if we did not have the Ku Klux Klan and all these races and everything, we could have done really well for ourselves just by doing farming and mining, you know, and built industries.
You have to
farming.
Go ahead and show them that that's the way the real money is, and that's something else that we've got to capture some of these young folks, some of these young cats' attention. Are you showing them where the real money is? You go ahead and doing all this bullshit in the street, ain't no money. But you go ahead, you got a little bit of land, you go, this is what you can do on your land. And you can go ahead and not have nobody fucking bother you because none of these cats
farming,
out in the street.
Farming, fish.
Don't want to do what they're doing in the street. They want to go ahead
farming,
and do something else.
Farming,
on a job.
Chicken, poultry, cattle raising, all these things, you know, commercial farming, livestock farming, all these things right here, if we basically master these things, we can basically duplicate this all over the world.
I was trying to explain to him because it's another guy I know that's in Tennessee who's got he's getting the cattle. He got a cattle ranch, right? And he's got all the equipment to do tanning. Okay, so we're trying to set it up so we can get a lot of people going down there. Like, they have to go ahead and stomach get a good stomach to go ahead and watch the slaughter. But once they get that hide off and they show that, hey, this is where your shoes come from, your belts, your hats, your coats. Your gloves. This is where it comes from. This is that cow had that leather. Okay, this cat making good money because he got all the equipment on his farm, and he come up in Chicago and sell his stuff on the street. You got some people selling his stuff on the street, make good money.
Right. There's all kinds of industries. What they call value added vertical industries that can be made from that leather, mittworking, you know, all manufacturing, all these other things. That could be that's done for the like that. But like I said, getting back to Liberia, all those things we talk about was done in Liberia. Liberia has some of the richest farmers in the world. Think about it: black people who were slaves went to Liberia and had their own 25, 50 acres of the farm, had their families built homesteads, generations of people living on the farm and everything. They were exporting all over the world, everything from palm oil to corn to cotton to coffee. The indigo, to everything. And Liberia Liberia, the reason why we don't know about Liberia is because black people will look at that and say, well, geez, if you guys did that, we had our own government and all those things like that, we have to worry about lynchings and all this stuff like that, why didn't we go for that? It's because this is the biggest mystery in the world. Why would black people turn down the opportunity to have their own nation to go through what we went through in America? No other group of people in history would ever choose being subjected to what we've been subjected to over having their own nation. And
but you ain't gonna get that out of these some of these young folks. You have to go
Hold on.
You're gonna have to start all over again and deal with the babies, period. Start daycares, you know, these kindergartens, whatever. That's what you're gonna have to do because a lot of these young folks, they fucking gone. I was looking at my brother's daughters, man, and I'm like, man, them two so-and-so's, man, you know, once they go ahead and leave the house, need to lock the damn door. Because you go ahead, you're chasing them down and going ahead and going through all this hell with them, let them stay out there. Because you're wasting your time with them. Because you keep on, let them go ahead and get their head beat in, then they come back and realize, hey, look, you was right. Because that's what it takes for a lot of us right now. You can't keep telling them because they don't want to listen. You got to let them get their ass.
And that's why I school everybody. When we build stuff or whatnot, we cannot go to people. We got to let people come to us and say, look, this is what we're doing. When we're building and doing our thing, the Black Wall Street Kinetic Pipeline, I told Jonathan Sinclair, we're not going to be chasing anybody. No. People are going to hear about it. Well, yeah, this is what they're doing. And when you start building things and everything like that, and people know that, well, geez, if I really want to be part of that, I got to change and I got to become part of that, you know? We can't just you cannot do that because the bottom line is this is how black people are, our psychology of black people, you know? When it comes down to us, we don't respect our own black authority. You know, we don't respect black businesses. We don't respect black achievement. We don't respect black anything, you know. But when we work for the white man or the greedy white man, you know, you're going to make sure his money's right and he's going to do his job to the T. When we come to our people, we're like, oh, we're trying to come
Wait, hold on, Caleb. We do respect, a lot of us respect black business, but it's the type of black business that we respect more.
Right,
than
no, hold on. I didn't get that.
The one that's designed the black businesses in the community that they feel that they can go ahead and give you that all materialism shit. You know, those are the ones we respect instead of the ones that go ahead and say, hey, look, I got here, I go ahead, I created this, I done this for myself instead of going ahead and selling a product that's going ahead and hurting you and destroying you, or going ahead and putting
right.
you into a mindset that's going ahead and hurting you.
Right. Now, let me give you an example. There's another part to that, right? At the same time, we don't have the culture where you're a black proprietor or a businessman or a contractor or a builder that you basically, even though, let's say majority of your clientele is black, are you going to give them top-notch service and care about your reputation, or are you going to basically be slack and do anything knowing that, okay, they'll understand, you know, this, that, and the other thing? When you have employees, are you going to basically have a line of credit where you can pay them payroll and keep your taxes up, or you're going to basically be like, okay, I got to pay you next week when we do this job, or not paying people and all stuff like that, like a lot of black businesses run. Remember I put that blog out years ago? Have you ever worked for a black business and ever received a payroll check? I've had all kinds of – I thought I was going to be like, okay, Carl, shut up, and I thought people would diss me. And I put that up there and everything, and people were like, you know something? I never did. And then one girl said, yeah, well, I worked in such and such when we had a business. I said, well, was it payroll? No, but we got paid. No. What I mean is, at the end of the week, did you see such and such taken out for the IRS and W-2 and all the stuff like that? And you got a weekly paycheck drawn consistently from a black business. No, well, I'll pay you or take money out of the cash register, or he's pulling the money out of his pocket to give you and all that. How many people basically at black businesses that you know that give their employees a paycheck on a weekly basis or a bi-weekly basis consistently over a period of years? And people are like, you know something, you're right. That's because black businesses got to start taking themselves seriously and bring their level of expectation up. And at the same time, we have to basically respect that businesses, pay what the businesses want, respect the businesses who are in there, respect the property and all the stuff like that. So it's a relationship that has to change. You know, it's a two-way street. It's a relationship that has to change.
Let me show you how I see that two-way street. I see that two-way street. You got to go ahead and respect business. But a lot of us don't know how to be customers. And that's the bigger part. I think that's a bigger problem with dealing with business. You got to learn how to go ahead and to be a consumer. And we don't know how to be consumers. All we know how to do is buy other people's shit that's not helping us instead of buying our own shit that can go ahead and help us.
And when we go to black businesses, let's say like a mechanic, you know. If I go to a mechanic, whatnot, I expect you, okay, if something's wrong with my car, my vehicle, you fix what's wrong with it. I don't want you telling me, you know, because you want to make more money or whatever like that. You know, it's a trust thing. I expect you to do a good job on my car, and whatever the labor hours and everything like that, I'm going to pay that. Not, no, I'll give you half now, and I'll pay you this, and you change. No. We have to be, you know, we have to establish a relationship, you know, a relationship where businesses and consumers and clients and everything work together and basically to create harmony. You know, other than that, you know, you're always going to have Lebanese and everybody coming in and thing. When you go to a Lebanese store, you ain't asking them for no discount. You know, it's like, this, boom, that's what it is. You better pay it. And that's it. You don't even bother that.
Yeah, we still got some work, but we can't give up. Look here, brothers, I'm going to go ahead and call it a night. I'm glad you guys called in. I'm trying to do my shows again. Kayla, are you going to start doing your shows again?
Next month, by the end of the month, I'll be back on. No later than the end of this month. I had a lot of stuff I had to do, but like, by the end of the month, I'm going to be back on and whatnot. So we'll probably have to coordinate our shows.
I'm going to have mine on same time, about 10 o'clock central. So, you know, come on over here until you get yours together. So
yeah.
We can go ahead and coordinate our
11,
shows, all right?
11 o'clock, 11:30 Eastern time.
Yeah,
like
you
so
too, brother. How you feeling?
I'm good.
Yeah, man, because I want you to go come on through until you start doing some stuff. We need to go ahead and get this back going, get it rolling.
Oh, the bottom line is this. Hold up, when he puts out these clips and everything on YouTube and he gets those responses and everything, people take those responses, right? They repeat them. Let me tell you something. I know the power of it, right? Because, like I said,
yeah,
the work that I'm doing in Liberia is over. Yo, I'm going to give everybody a briefing on all the success I've had in Liberia. I basically almost transformed that whole entire country. I got everybody from all walks of life in Liberia listening to me and read my blogs and whatnot. These people hated us, you know? Now I got them saying, yeah, you know, African Americans, they really want to come here, man. This is their country, too. I had to beat some people down and whatnot, and basically tell them, you guys don't know anything about us. You know, people believe all these lies about us and all this kind of stuff like that and everything. Now you got people in Africa, all over Africa, like, when you guys coming here? When you guys building, man? I like what you're saying and everything. You know?
Well, I'm gonna start playing them clips on my show. Brother Holison, I'm gonna start playing yours and some of them other stuff. I'm gonna start playing them too because I got some more brothers ready to chime in. You know, I'm trying to figure out what the hell happened to a few of them. They kept telling me basically they can come through on the weekend. And I got this couple of psychologists coming through, and psychiatrists. You know, they deal with a whole lot of black issues, and you'll be interested to hear what they got to say. But hopefully I can have Dr. Ed on tomorrow, and you'll like what he got to say. We got to catch him early before the basketball season.
All righty, y'all brothers be good.
Yeah, it's gonna be good, buddy. You know, I hope you don't mind. I'm gonna be taking some of your YouTube clips, there, brother.
Take them all.
Okay, I'm gonna stop bringing them through and playing.
That's what that's how we work. How we work together. You know, like I said, we just have to be the example. You know, we put our egos and everything aside, and we all work together. That's the relationship we have built over the years. You know,
I'm gonna come kick
you
ass.
You know, and
Look at brothers, I gotta get out of here. You know, and it's been real nice, man. And I'm gonna be doing this again tomorrow. So,
I'm gonna try to stop by tomorrow.
Dad's gonna do a show tomorrow?
I'm not sure. I think he is though.
Okay, because I want to clash with him. I kind of want us to kind of fall in line like a regular old network. You know, we go and do this. And then Scotty Reed called me earlier, so we're going to try to do something with him in a little while. Because,
okay,
you know, just keep this message going. And then also I got some other brothers going to be coming through. Like I said, I had some bunch of problems with my mom getting sick and passing. So, you know, I'm back, and I got to do this because my mom left me some great messages to go ahead and keep this hope, keep my thing going.
All right,
Brother Rob.
All right, brothers.
All right, I'll talk to y'all later. Peace.
Peace. Okay.